Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter at www.churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Leading Ideas Talks is also brought to you by Discovering God's Future for Your Church. This turnkey video toolkit helps your congregation discern and implement God's vision for your church's next faithful steps. Discovering God's Future for Your Church is available at churchleadership.com/shop. Looking for ways to re-energize your congregation? In this episode, we speak with church renewal expert Sue Nielsen-Kibbe. She discusses the central role of breakthrough prayer in helping a congregation shift the focus of its gaze up and out, rather than down and in.
I'm Ann Michael. I'm the Associate Director of the Lewis Center for Church Leadership, and I'm the editor of Leading Ideas e-newsletter. And I'm so pleased today to be the host of this episode of Leading Ideas Talks Podcasts, speaking today with Sue Nielsen-Kibbe. Sue is the director of the Missional Church Consultation Initiative for the West Ohio Conference of the United Methodist Church. She served many years at Ginghamsburg United Methodist Church in Tipp City, Ohio, which is one of the great turnaround churches of our times. She's worked with more than 70 congregations to help them achieve more fruitful ministry. And Sue is also the author of several books, most recently, Ultimate Reliance. So, Sue, welcome. It's good to be talking with you today.
Well, thank you so much. It's an honor.
I wanted to turn right away to the central premise of your most recent book, Ultimate Reliance, and that is that congregational prayer needs to be at the heart of congregational renewal. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to that.
Well, when we began the Missional Church Consultation Initiative, or MCCI as we call it for short, it was the most challenging appointment as a United Methodist clergy that I had ever received thus far, and it still continues to be today. And the challenge of our bishop in West Ohio at that time, or his dream, was that we would create a coaching, training, resourcing initiative to help good churches with clergy who wanted to lead the church forward, with laity who wanted to see their churches move forward, but who were stuck or maybe starting to decline, that this would be a resourcing initiative that would be the wind beneath their wings to help them move forward into their next season of fruitfulness. And so the challenge and the invitation of the bishop was to create a training course, a coaching resourcing initiative, a training, coaching, resourcing initiative that would accomplish this. And as I began praying and thinking through all of my own experience leading churches, my own season as a trainer of other churches, now needing to bring it together into this intensive kind of experience for 10 to 12 churches every year at that time in the West Ohio Conference, I realized that any revitalization initiative must begin with prayer, that prayer for God to do the new thing, for God to break through with new hopes, dreams, and possibilities, and that we would all surrender ourselves, both personally and as a congregation, to what it is that God has next. And, you know, Oswald Chambers, who is the one behind what is probably the most popular daily devotional of our generation, My Utmost for His Highest, mm-hmm. made this point. He said, just as our physical bodies need physical food to stay healthy, strong, vibrant, and energetic, and without food, our bodies can become weak, listless, apathetic. We just want to sit around and not do anything. We could even die if we don't eat food. And Oswald Chambers pointed out that just as our physical bodies need physical food to eat and stay vibrant, So the food of the body of Christ, which Scripture says is the church, that the food of the body of Christ is prayer. And so is it any wonder that sometimes churches can become weak, listless, apathetic, indifferent, not motivated, because, they can even die. Could it be that churches are snacking on prayer rather than feasting on prayer? And what could happen if at the center across everything, all ages ongoing, that there was a feast of prayer happening that helped the church become strong, vital, energetic, courageous, ready to step out? And so I really knew that the MCCI had to begin with training pastors and churches on how to put prayers for God to break through anew at the center ongoing of everything. And so I created this simple training on how to put this additive component to the existing prayer life of the church, that God would do the new thing, to break through anew, to show us what God has, and that we'll surrender ourselves, how to position that every time the church is praying, and all of us personally and across the church, and for that to be ongoing, and that would be the beginning of every church's revitalization journey through the MCCI, because you see, the church isn't just an institution or an organization that we're going to reorganize into a new season. The church is a spiritual movement, and a spiritual movement is fueled by prayer. And so that's how this Breakthrough Prayer Initiative happened. That's how it got started. And what it evolved into was that this Breakthrough Prayer Initiative, in addition to fueling the 10 to 12.
So Sue, I'm so grateful to you for naming, I think, what in so many ways should be obvious to us, that renewal in the church begins with spiritual renewal. And yet, I have never heard anyone, you know, name it with the clarity and the sense of purpose that you are bringing this. And so I really want to thank you for drawing our attention to something that should, I think, be so obvious to us, and yet it often isn't. I mean, I think so often renewal efforts are centered around tactics and strategies, and neglecting sort of the fundamental spiritual underpinning. I wondered if you could maybe give an example or describe some of the experiences that you've had in working with churches that engage this breakthrough prayer process.
Well, that's a very interesting question, and when I begin bringing the Breakthrough Prayer Initiative training to a church, a pastor, and the leaders, often churches are feeling some urgency because they're seeing decline, mm-hmm. and they're looking for the next steps to bring a new season and new revitalization. They're looking for a program. They're looking for a new staff person they can hire. They're looking for a way to redo the budget or whatever this is. And so to propose that the real place that revitalization begins is with a breakthrough prayer initiative across the whole church, that interestingly enough, for some discouraged church leaders isn't where they thought about starting,
right.
You know, thought about starting. And sometimes I hear, well, we have a 7 a.m. Friday prayer group that's been praying for years. They're praying, and now help us revitalize the church. They're praying, and now help us revitalize the church. And my premise is, and my learning and my passion is, that it is the leadership of the church that is leading the Breakthrough Prayer Initiative. It is the pastor, it's the administrative council, the board of trustees, all the positional leaders of the church are the ones leading the way, adding this breakthrough prayer initiative, this additive component for God to break through with the new thing. They're leading the breakthrough prayer initiative. They're leading the rest of the church, because it really is impossible without opening the door to this miraculous movement and direction of God's Spirit for anything to go forward. In fact, trying to have a strategic vision retreat, which some churches do, well, we're going to get a hold of our revitalization by having a 4 or 5 hour strategic vision retreat on Saturday. You know, really, if we get together and do that without praying ahead of time for God to show us the new steps and doing this extensively and across the church, we're just getting together for a Saturday morning vision retreat to share our own opinions. We're not really on what God's speaking and showing us is what's next. And so I will say that the paradigm shift of this prayer at the center, that pastor is the champion and leader at all times of rallying the church to the breakthrough prayer initiative in and through everything, that the positional leaders of the church are right along there incorporating it every time they meet, and all of that is significant to mention. And when this happens, there is transformation at all levels, including in our own personal lives of faith.
Can you think of a church that really experienced wonderful transformation as a result of this? I mean, can you share a success story maybe?
I can probably spend the next 3 hours sharing, you know. So one story that comes to my mind immediately is a church that brought pastor plus a team of leaders to a breakthrough prayer initiative training event I did maybe 2 months ago. And one of the leaders that came to this was a 92-year-old lifelong member of the church. She was a retired teacher. She had taught in the children's Sunday school back in the day when they had 100 children in Sunday school. And at the time that this pastor brought his leaders and came to the Breakthrough Prayer Initiative training, they were down to 3 children in Sunday school. Hmm. So they came to the training, and we talked about taking this church-wide to all ages, the teens, the children, the leadership, you know, and adding this component. And the 92-year-old teacher went home to the church, and that Sunday, she's the only teacher. There's 3 children in the Sunday school. She took some of her learnings about breakthrough prayer to the 3 little children. Mm-hmm. And that Sunday, she shared it with them in their Sunday school class. And she said to the children, "We need to pray for another teacher to be able to teach in another classroom for older children." And she took the children by their hands, and she and the children went and prayed, prayer walked, prayed and walked through the empty children's Sunday school classrooms of that building. And every Sunday for 3 weeks, she and the children prayed and walked through those empty Sunday school classrooms. And the third Sunday they did that, a new leader approached the pastor after the worship service that morning and said, "Hey, do you need any children's Sunday school teachers here? I think I'd like to do that." And it was the same Sunday that a new family showed up with 3 older children who would need to be in an older class with the teacher. Now, this was only the beginning of what unfolded at that church. But do we really believe that prayer makes a difference? Do we really believe that God must love that prayer? Do we believe that God's been looking and continues to look for openings in the hearts and the minds of God's people in churches everywhere, asking for new breakthroughs and new possibilities, and that we'd be surrendered to it? And this is just one small story that has had eternal significance for a set of children. I believe this church is up to 15 children in three different classrooms with teachers in every classroom now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what does it mean for God's church to rise again?
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing that story. I want to maybe now get a little bit into your long experience in working with congregations that have been, you know, seeking to renew themselves and taking as a given this very important reliance on prayer that you've named as foundational. As you work with different congregations, what are some of the characteristics and practices that you think are essential in addition to this foundation of prayer?
For revitalization?
Mm-hmm.
I really think that the journey of revitalization is ongoing for every church, which is a spiritual movement of Jesus. That's what the church is. The New Testament clearly helps us understand that the Church of Jesus Christ is a spiritual movement. And I believe that it's essential for those who lead the church, not only the pastor, but the church's lay leadership, understand the dynamics of fueling a movement and are really coachable around what that looks like, how that we're not there just to, you know, be small group leaders of a congregation, although leadership of a small group is a calling, a gifting and a calling in and of itself. We need people who lead small groups, but leading a church, that's something different. That's leading a movement. And I think coachability and openness mm-hmm. to what it means to lead a movement is very, very important. And part of the willingness to lead a movement is being the willingness to try new things, to do things differently than they've been done before, to see what God might do if we tried it this way instead of that way, to learn from that, to step out and let God take us to new places with that. And so that kind of openness of coachability is just a non-negotiable.
Yeah, so I'm hearing an openness to change and a willingness to think big, which of course probably ties back, you know, holistically to the importance of breakthrough prayer as well. When you use the word movement, it reminded me of your I think it's your first book. Ultimately Responsible. Was that your first book, Sue?
It was the first book of this kind I wrote, yes.
Yeah. So I think I've told you on several occasions that book really had a huge impression on me. It came out in 2006, which was just as I was getting started in leadership studies. And I think the reason it made such a big impact on me is that it really looked at leadership practices systemically. It didn't look at just the role of the pastor. One of my criticisms of the body of literature that we have around church leadership is so much of it is focused on the role of the pastor. And I think your book really looked more holistically as leadership at leadership as it's practiced across a congregation. And it also really dealt with some of the spiritual underpinnings of leadership. And so I really want to thank you for that gift. But I wanted to use that as an opportunity to think about the question of leadership. And I wondered whether you might share what you think some of the key leadership practices are for congregations that are seeking to enhance their ministry.
Well, Anne, you and I share the same heart and passion that the movement, the spiritual movement of the church, is not just about the pastor. It is about God's people rising up and following Jesus collectively and getting unleashed to do so, that the church would be an environment where the central activity of the church is people being equipped and commissioned and unleashed to change the world with the message and the mission and the love of Jesus. And so I'm so with you right there in that. I think that the churches that I see and work with and celebrate to the depths of my heart are churches where any paid leadership, as well as the key unpaid leadership, understand that their core purpose is to set the stage for those who are part of the congregation to discern and sense what God is speaking them to them, that they can uniquely do, who they're called to be, what their passion is. And they're setting the stage to identify, equip, deploy, and cheer on the congregation to rise up. One of the great perils of the church, which to my opinion guarantees status quo and decline, is when the paid leadership and the unpaid leadership assume that they're the ones that get to do all the real strategic work of the church and that the congregation is just there to help them out,
yeah,
you know,
right,
when something's needed.
Let me ask another question. You know, you've been at this work a fairly long time, and so I wanted to ask you, what seems different to you today than, say, 15 years ago when you wrote Ultimately Responsible, in terms of you know, the challenges that churches are facing and some of the ways forward?
What an interesting question that is. My sense is that in this unique time, not only of our country, our culture, our society, also of the United Methodist denomination, which is my primary setting, what I feel like that I see is in a time where our churches need to become more and more nimble to stay relevant to their mission fields, mm-hmm, all around. Our message never changes, but our techniques to stay relevant to our mission fields all around, instead our churches are hunkering down and hanging on because of the rapid pace of change and shifting going on, not only in our society, but denominationally, you know, various factors here. And rather than navigating the waves, riding the waves, learning to be nimble and adept at riding the waves of the current times in various levels, we kind of put down the anchor,
yeah,
batten down the hatches, and think we're going to ride it out, and in so doing, sink further and further from where we really would prefer to be and to go.
Yeah, that's a really apt metaphor, I think, and I do see that tendency. I think particularly in denominational systems, you know, that people think hanging fast to the traditions becomes all the more important in changing times when in fact that probably is you know, counterintuitive to what reality dictates. I guess as I was thinking about that question myself and looking back at your 2006 book, Ultimately Responsible, I think that in that book and so many other resources that came out in the 2000s, what strikes me is that they all have some common assumptions about how people would come into the life of the church and engage the life of faith. And what we took at that time to be a given pattern of how people were going to engage the life of the church no longer seems as normative as it did 15 or 20 years ago. And I wondered if you share that observation.
I really think that is a right-on observation. And in the learnings that have come through the work of this MCCI resourcing. And we're now to, I believe, as of this fall, 180 congregations across multiple conferences that have been journeying through it or entering it. The learning that I've had, some learnings I've had about it, I wrote in my book, Floodgates, that came out in 2016, Floodgates, Holy Momentum for a Fearless Church, some learnings about this very thing that I wrote about in that book. And I attempted to point out in that book that now I have finally understood, for example, that the process of discipleship within a congregation, the setting of a congregation, you and I, Anne, can remember back at the time that there was a general understanding that a discipleship pathway was a set of classes. And I'm not saying that a set of classes isn't useful. But in Floodgates, I wrote a chapter called Ubiquitous Discipleship, where I talked about what it really takes to set the stage in a congregation for people to progress spiritually, for people to move along spiritually, and how there's a whole different way of looking at that that can help you create such an environment that that the entire church really is this glorious progression of followers of Jesus growing forward together that may include classes, but also may include a retreat or a mission trip or whatever it's going to be. But you can craft it in such a way that people's spiritual growth is fueled and triggered very significantly to continue to move forward. And so it's just a different picture now. Yeah. And times are different, people are different. And this is part of that nimbleness that we've referenced already that is all about, I think, the church of now and beyond.
Yeah, I love that phrase, ubiquitous discipleship. I have read Floodgates, and I think that it's it really does start to identify some of this paradigm shift in how we attract and engage people, and we need to be thinking about it in so much more holistic and varied ways from the patterns that I think we used to assume were normative. To begin to draw this conversation to a close, I wanted to, you know, so much of the meta-narrative around church life today is negative, right? I mean, there's declining attendance, there's declining finances, there's decreasing, for those of us who are in theological education, we're faced with declining enrollments in many, many settings. And yet we are called to do this work of renewing our church against a backdrop of what often gets projected as a very negative scenario. And so I wanted to end this, give you the opportunity to just name what it is that gives you hope in this, and what keeps you going, and what should be keeping all of us going as we are continuing this work in the face of what seemed to be an increasing level of challenge.
You know, it is true that if we look at circumstances around us, as you've described, we can be very discouraged, very discouraged. And I thank God that no one seems to have told churches like the Grove United Methodist Church in Woodbury, Minnesota, one of our MCCI churches in the Minnesota Conference. The Grove is a congregation that only a few years ago had been plateau and in decline, a substantial church with a wonderful building, wondering what it would mean to reach their growing demographic. And with a thoroughgoing breakthrough prayer initiative and faithful implementation of every tool that I talked about in Floodgates and that we train about, this church is leading the way in the entire Minnesota Conference.
Wow.
With new people every week, with connecting people immediately into what we call First Friends, which is a MCCI initiative that connects new people into new friendships right away. This church is in mission all over the city, has completely changed its cosmetic appearance inside so that it feels welcoming in new ways to new people, and in every way is on such a move forward. Not that this church isn't thoughtful and discerning about the bigger milieu of what's happening in our denomination, but their momentum is so significant, continuing to ask God to break through with the new, that they quite frankly don't have time to wring their hands over the realities because they're keeping up with where God is leading. And I really think that this is why this foundation of Breakthrough Prayer Initiative changes everything. It shifts us up and out, inviting God to rally us, to lead us forward. And it puts everything into the perspective of what the church has really called to be.
Yeah, well, Sue, I really want to thank you for naming the fact that you know, it's hard to be discouraged when we have you know, God as our leader and Christ as our leader, and when we keep focused on that, you know, the way forward is bright and obvious, I think, in ways that you've helped us see. So I want to thank you for the work that you're doing. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with me and our listeners today about this important work, and wish you continued blessings and fruitfulness in this important ministry that you've undertaken.
Oh, Anne, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to visit with you, and I'm so grateful for your leadership and the work that you're continually doing to help us, help our churches succeed in their mission. So thank you so much.
On the next Leading Ideas Talks, we discuss Messy Church with Johanna Myers, Director of Christian Formation at Aldersgate United Methodist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Johanna is an integral part of the Messy Church movement, and she shares with us how this way of being church for all ages is a viable possibility for established congregations.
I don't know too many worship services that you can go to where there's going to be scissors, shaving cream, paint, pipe cleaners, paper, some kind of building material, kind of by nature. The activities, the crafts, the hands-on aspect of Messy Church is very, very different from what we would see. And I would say most worship services. There may be some out there that I haven't heard of. I would love to hear about them because I think that would be fabulous. But on the whole, the bulk of our time in Messy Church is spent in very kind of hands-on ways. So we do science experiments together. We do crafts. We might build something together. We might, play a game or something like that. And in that sense, you're not going to necessarily walk into a messy church and think, wow, this looks just like our Sunday morning service.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to Leading Ideas at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.